Growing up in Pennsylvania coal country, writer Jennifer Haig learned that a lot of what matters in the state can't be seen. It lies beneath the surface in the form of potential energy. She saw how the boom and bust cycles of mining affected the people of her town, which is now poised on the brink of fracking. She's taken what she knows and turned it into a novel called Heat and Light. She gave NPR's Lynn Neary a tour of her hometown.
Jennifer Haig doesn't think of her novel as a book about fracking.
I think it's a book about the soul of a place and how the soul of a place is impacted by the choices we make, economic choices. That's really the heart of the book.
The choice that faces landowners in the novel is whether or not to lease their mineral rights for natural gas drilling, also known as fracking. We see the effects of their decision from the perspective of many characters: a prison guard who sells his rights to finance a dream, an organic farmer who refuses to sign. There's an environmentalist who stirs up the pot, and a charismatic energy company executive.
When I started writing this book, I thought I knew what I thought about fracking. And as I learned more about it, I realized it was not as simple as it seemed to be. And so I continually found myself inventing characters who were inhabiting different parts of this argument.
All these characters converge on the town of Bakerton, a fictional place that Haig says is like a collage of several real towns, including her own.
So let's have a walk.
Where are we exactly?
This is Philadelphia Avenue. This is the main street in Northern Cambria, as it is now called.
We start our tour at Irma Jean's restaurant, one of the only businesses still thriving on the main street.
Across the street is where the radio station used to be. That was Radio WNCC. That was the sound of my childhood. It's no longer there.
A lot of things are no longer there.
A lot of things are no longer there. This store, Paul's Shoe Store, I got my first ballet shoes here. I got my first majorette boots here. I got saddle shoes for cheerleading here. And this is what's left.
The shop looks like it was abandoned in haste. Empty pedestals that once held shoes sit forlornly in the window. Inside, the store is littered with shoeboxes and lined floor to ceiling with empty wooden display cases. It's the same up and down the street, store after store, closed. Coal used to be the engine that drove the town's economy.
All throughout my childhood, people had good jobs, union jobs. You could graduate from high school and get a job that would support your family for 30 or 40 years.
Haig offers to show me the site of one of the mines that used to employ a lot of people here.
So the Greenwich mine was out this way.
As we leave town, Haig points out all the old churches, which have also been abandoned.
You know, this used to be a town of churches and bars, and the bars have fared better than the churches have.
And you've got a bar in the book.
Yes, it is absolutely deliberate. The family in the book, the Devlins, was a mining family for three generations. But when Dick Devlin lost his job in the mines, he bought a tavern, opened a tavern with his brother. So he's in the tavern business. His older son is a prison guard at a prison full of drug offenders. And his younger son is a recovering heroin addict and a counselor at a methadone clinic. So it's a whole family that is now employed by addiction that 50 years ago would have been employed by the mines. So this is now called Mine Road, and it overlooks where the Greenwich Mine was.
When we stop the car and get out, we're standing at the top of a big round bowl of land littered with trash.
We just scared a rabbit.
You would never know there was once a working mine here.
Back in the day, back when I was in high school and the mine was still running, from this vantage point you could see the tipple of the mine. But all that has been dismantled long ago.
Nothing has replaced the mines in this town. Fracking had not yet moved into the area when Haig started writing the book, so she visited other towns to see how the process of drilling changes the land and daily life. Like so many others, Haig moved away long ago. But growing up here, she understands why people let strangers come in and tear up their land looking for natural gas.
The controversy about fracking has been so interesting for me to follow because where I live in Boston, my friends are environmentally conscious. And there is a pretty unanimous consensus that fracking is a terrible idea and nobody should ever do it. To people who live in a region like this, who haven't had any good news in a very long time, it's inconceivable that you would refuse to sell your mineral rights. Why wouldn't you? It just seems like manna from heaven. So I think this argument over fracking is, in a basic way, a class argument.
Driving back to town, we noticed heavy equipment digging up the land behind a big barn. Could that be, we wondered? Haig emailed me a couple of days later. She had asked around and discovered that indeed it was the beginning of a fracking site, the first she has seen in the countryside around her hometown. Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.